You are listening to the Vital MX Post-Race Show, presented by Decal Works.
Welcome to the 13th Vital MX Post-Race Show of the season. That's because round 13 of 2024 Monster Energy Supercross has just concluded in Foxborough. And would you believe it, we have a title fight on our hands. No one would have put money on that a couple of weeks ago, leaving Indianapolis, but this could get quite spicy across the next 4 weeks. So we'll discuss all of that on this episode of the Vital MX Post-Race Show. Of course, we are able to do that because of the support from Decal Works, Beta USA, and Fox Racing. Decal Works are on quite a tear at the moment with Chase Sexton of the Red Bull KTM Factory Racing team. And hey, maybe, just maybe, Decal Works can start to think about potentially producing a championship t-shirt design. I mean, it's maybe a bit far off at this stage, but it has to be considered. And we will get to that a little later on. I am your host, Lewis Phillips, as per usual, joined by Michael Lindsay. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. I just hope if they make Chase Sexton championship merch and it doesn't win, that it does not go to a foreign country, so it does not end up on Child Soldiers and does not end up on the cover of, I think it was like New York Post website. That happened to Dungey's merch 1 year that Fox made and he didn't win the title. And then it was on Child Soldiers with AK-47s in their hands.
Any publicity is good publicity.
I don't think in this case it was.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess everyone in the world...
I think we draw the line at Child Soldiers.
And if there's... Yeah, no, okay. We found a line. That's great. Look at that. We're 2 minutes in and we've already established a line.
Doing great things.
Yeah, let's start with this. No one... If I had told you after Indianapolis that Jet's 21-point lead would disappear, and not through a DNF, a mechanical, there's no way you would have believed it, right? Because I certainly wouldn't have.
Well, you didn't say, I guess, I don't know, the one moto. Yeah, especially completely evaporated. Like, if you told me he had, I would have believed, you know, like, kind of what happened to the Triple Crown, like, goes down first corner or gets hit by somebody and gets banged up and has a really just rough race and loses a chunk of it. But to have it that and then just straight up lose it just under racing circumstances. Yeah. Especially to who he's lost it to. And I don't mean that in a rude way. It's just crazy that when you think of everybody that's in this field, everybody that's healthy, that Webb is the one that's taking him to it. And all that pops in my head is if Webb pulls this off, this has to be the great, like, the highlight of his career, to straight up beat all these dudes.
Yeah, and of course there is, if there's one rider you do not want to be tied on points with a couple of rounds to go, it is Cooper Webb. I'm sure that everyone would be able to tell from his demeanor that this is right where he wants to be, and there's no lack of self-belief. And to be honest, there's no lack of self-belief because of Cooper Webb's recent string of results. Momentum is on his side, but also that is just his personality as well. But that is a key point, I believe. Like, Jet does not have momentum at this point. So that's another challenge that I don't necessarily feel as though we've seen him have to deal with. Okay, maybe a little bit earlier in the season, but it's early in the season. So no one really has momentum.
But early in the season, I think even him, like with those a couple bad rounds here or there, not what he wanted, at least when I talk about everybody else in the field was up and down. So every week you could take solace in like, okay, nobody's really gaining or walking away, but Webb is doing exactly what we talked about for weeks. Somebody had to take points out of Jet more than 1 week and in a row. And of course, Coop's 3 weeks in a row now. To watch Jet go from a win in Indianapolis, 25 points, to score 20 points, 14-17. Just, you know, Seattle wasn't bad, but then to me after that, and then looking at Webb on the board with a 25, 22, 25. I don't know. The thing that really strikes me with this is, like you said, the person... Okay, if you're in Jet's situation, who are you really most afraid of to be tied in points with? Let's say Eli wasn't as this far back and he had that resurgence race and he strung it together and was on par with him. Let's say Chase is on par with him or Webb's on par with him. I actually think Webb would be the one I'm most afraid of, because even looking at the last 2 weekends, like Webb has done like what we talk about, like un-Webb-like races, like Pulshan lead wire to wire. He elevates himself when the time calls. And I think that's what's so scary about him. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of like Reed Carmichael, like Reed would step up and do things that kind of will himself to do things. So I feel like it's very unpredictable, because it's like Webb's pretty much willing to throw any game plan at making this work. You kind of can't go, oh, he's going to do this, and that's how I beat him.
I would say that Cooper Webb was already buoyant coming into the day, because the way that he got out front in the final timed session and just laid down heaters, I can't recall a time I've seen Cooper Webb do that. So even coming in with an 8-point deficit, I feel like he was already raring to go and get this thing on. So this is only going to spur him on. It's early to say this, but weather forecast for Nashville is horrendous. rain all day Friday, and crucially, rain all day Saturday from sun up to sundown. Like, there's no break per the current weather forecast, which could change, obviously. But to be honest with you, well, actually, let me ask you this. Say we do get a mudder, who's the better mud rider, Webb or Jet?
Neither of them stand out as great mud riders to me. I just think with the situation, if you give me the tune, the situation they're in, like kind of even how Jet was with the mudder this year and seeing him after the race, like, I don't mean this rudely, but kind of like mopey. I would take Webb over that any day right now, just because of the attitude. And I'm sure Jazzy and their camp is very aware, but I mean, I hope they get, like, basically we all know Jet has the speed, you know, everything, just getting his head back on straight to be, just hate to like be so simple with it, but be positive going into Nashville. If it's going to be a mudder, like, just don't be bummer. Don't be down on the whole situation. Like, cause we all know Webb is going to be over there just doing the RV, the hand sliding together, just ready. Because even if you kind of classify Webb as an okay mud rider, Webb is going to convince himself he's an amazing mud rider. Again, he is going to, there is no game plan. The guy's just going to will himself to make this happen at this point.
I would actually argue, and maybe this is a outlandish statement, I would argue that Webb will have more of an advantage if it's dry than if it's muddy. And this is my thinking. So Nashville last year was horrifically hard-packed, about as hard-packed as you can possibly get. And Jet has said multiple times this year that hard-pack tracks are where his starts suffer. So already I'm thinking, if Nashville is dry, what are the chances of Jet getting a bad start? And if he gets a bad start a la Foxborough, do we just have a repeat of this? Although I am pro-Jet in this situation, and I believe you have to be, because the fact of the matter is he is the best rider in this series, the fastest rider as well, for sure, there are definitely more points to consider than there have been in recent weeks, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, after leaving Indianapolis, leaving Seattle, I remember sitting on this podcast and being like, yep, no problem. He was so good. Like, he finished third in Seattle, yeah, whatever. He'll get them next week. And, you know, I had someone message me that last night and they said, oh, Jet's the best rider. He'll get them next week. And I replied with, yeah, I agree. But also, I said he'll get them next week in Seattle. Then I said it in St. Louis. So I'm starting to wonder if, like, it's not as much of a foregone conclusion as we would be led to believe.
Well, the other thing I have right now is I'm also just looking at the next four races. So the championship can, in a sense, definitely be, if Nashville is a terrible mudder, like the championship can definitely be in a sense lost if one of them has a mechanical, you know, sinks a bike, whatever. Like, this could cost them the championship completely. If they both just kind of get through it, let's say, you know, even neither of them are on the podium, let's say they go 4 or 5 or something, they come out whatever, 1-2 points apart. I'm looking also at the next couple races, and to your point on the start, so looking way ahead in the schedule, Denver and Salt Lake, both hard pack venues. Philly is my question mark after Nashville, because we've never raced there. What are they going to run for dirt, etc.? You know, what are we going to read that, basically I'm saying, is like read that much into what the events are going to be like, Coop versus Jed on their skill sets?
We have done this question a couple of times. Who was the best rider on Saturday night? And of course, well done, Cooper Webb, and it could be Cooper Webb. Maybe that's your selection. But in your eyes, who was the best rider on that track?
Webb, because of the breadth of the day.
Okay.
You're going to go Chase Sexton, aren't you?
No, I was going to say, I think it's a wash between Webb, Sexton, Roczen, and Jet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
I could agree with Elf. Yeah. I mean, I could agree in the sense of it.
Like 0.1% below the group. But I feel like it was just a great display of what each of these guys could do, you know?
Yeah. Well, it kind of comes back to what I said. I mean, the storyline side of the racing had me interested, but again, I hate to say the races are snoozers, but they have been a little bit in the fact that these guys can kind of match each other tick for tack in a sense, which is just tough. I think it's, you know, big to see, again, after what we saw a couple performances during the year, what we know Jed is capable of, to, I don't know if it's one of these things or a combination of both. Has Jed's confidence slipped a little? How much of the other guys step up? But now it's Jet's speed advantages in his clear cut, of course, last couple weekends as it was at one point.
It's honestly fascinating. Do me title percentages. Obviously, I think the very logical title percentages based on the standings would be 40-40-20 or 45-45-10. That's a very...
I'm good. Yeah, 45-45-10. I've got to give Chase the 10. And even the... It just strikes me, again, he hasn't stepped up and been dominant like Webb is. I have a hard time unless something really like this. Like, my big thing is Chase could get it this weekend, of course. Again, if he comes out and wins in the mud and you have Coop and Jet go like 4-5, then we have a much more conversation. But I almost lean more towards like a 5% at Chase, but something similar to what I said, like 45-45-10, 48-48-4, something.
What we need is, this is how Nashville needs to go. There's a first turn crash. Jet and Cooper are in it. Their bikes are beaten up. They can't continue. Chase is also hung up in the crash, but only hung up. So he comes back to 10th. Eli does not get hung up at all and rips to the whole shot and to a clear win. And then, with that magical scenario, we would effectively have a 4-way tie. Or close enough.
Closer. You never know. You never know.
Let's start putting that out into the universe. Because, I mean, it's not
even start putting that energy out there.
Imagine. No, let's move on to Chase then. Arguably his best ride of the season, I do believe. He said that the start cost him the win, essentially. I would argue that more than the start, it was how long he spent behind Kenny. Obviously, yes. You could say if he got the start, he wouldn't have been behind Kenny. But ultimately, I feel like the start almost wouldn't have been an issue if he hadn't sat staring at the 94 jersey for, honestly, what felt like an eternity.
Forever. I mean, I got to the point, you know, almost didn't know. Like, I mean, once he got Kenny, like I said, he had the speed to immediately pull out. But there for a minute, I thought he had just had fallen into Kenny's pace so much. I kind of had almost given up on him passing him.
Well, to be honest, so had I, purely because of that, and he kind of exhausted all options. So, aside from Kenny making a mistake, I was like, I don't see where this is going to happen. And that actually is why, although Chase was great in the latter stages, I don't know if he would have got Webb, because he spent that long behind Kenny, so how would he have zapped Webb that quickly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it took that long behind Kenny, I can't envision a world where he can pass Webb within a lap. I kind of think that Webb had it, no matter, even if Chase hadn't made that mistake after the finish on the final lap. But it is, and I tweeted this and some people didn't get it, but, and this was going into the weekend, the fact that Chase Sexton is closer in points than he was last year is so hard to wrap your head around, because that one statement affects the outlook of so many different branches. Does that mean that actually Chase's season hasn't been as bad as we and he have been saying? Does that actually mean that, this is kind of what I subscribe to more than anything, that is a clear indicator of, oh wow, the level was insanely high last year. But then again, the level's high this year, so maybe not. It's also, you could say, well, that means that Chase, Jet, and Webb have all been incredible this year. Or you could say that it kind of points to the fact that Chase, Webb, and Jet have all actually failed to capitalize on and really take this thing, you know? Like, it, there are so many ways to react to that statement. But it is my...
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
I was going to say, I subscribe closer to the last one, and the very simple reason I say that is the total points haul. Jet and Coop lead this thing at 261. Chase last year sitting third in points had 275. It just comes back to the early part of the season, so much up and down, so much parity, nobody, again, being able to grasp onto this title. And you remember, we even talked about this with Jet. It was like early season, we had this just every week, who is it, who is it? And then Jet was the one that grasped onto it, in a sense, pretty much from Detroit on, and then with the three back-to-back wins, it looked like he finally grasped it, and for a minute it kind of seemed like nobody else could get their stuff together for, you know, 2 weeks in a row, and then somehow we have ended up in this position. Like, I mean, Chase's recent run has been good. When you look from Daytona on, the points overall points haul's been pretty solid, and Webb's pretty much started at Arlington on, has been pretty consistent. But I still think, like, in Chase's situation, I can see why he says that. Like, last season, even though he was farther out of the championship, yeah, I think he was, you know, time qualifying was amazing for him last year. The speed was there. There was a lot bigger moments. He was in the bow a lot more. This year's been a little bit more up and down, and I would argue he wouldn't be this close to the championship right now if somebody else would have got their head out of their ass earlier in the season.
Yeah, no, that's 100% fair. I said to him after the race, because
I was just going to say, Chase, I think it is unfair. These riders, of course, very easily get down on themselves, though, is everybody was in that situation. So at some point, you know, I hope some of these guys get some positivity going and go, you know, just say, well, fuck it. Maybe I'm not riding as good next last year. I don't feel like it, but I'm in this. So screw it.
Yeah, I asked Chase after the race, like, because Chase is, everyone knows by now that Chase doesn't, he doesn't blow smoke in interviews. Like, he'll be critical of himself. So I said to him, like, you're 15 points down. Do you even want to entertain the idea that you're in this? Because there was a part of me that felt like he'd go, no, I've had a terrible year. Like, yeah, great that I'm close, but whatever. Like, I kind of, there was a part of me that was expecting that reaction, but he was actually a little like, yeah. Like he made a fair point that last year and 2022, he came alive in the last five races, which is fair. And yeah, just generally, he was quite like, yeah, I think I like it, there was an air of, I think I can do this.
Yeah. And I think you have to have that again. I think if you look at, we talk about so much in the sport, when you take this top five, six, seven level of guys, it's, they're all extremely talented. They all have amazing skills on the bike. On any given day, they can be the fastest person out there. They have all the resources behind them. Just getting your head in it. I mean, again, when you take the talent level, a lot of people probably argue of the top group we talk about, Webb is probably the least talented on the bike. And look at what he's done. Because again, how he brought himself into this last race. He's like, no, I'm in this, and I'm going to make sure I'm in this. I'm going to do everything to put myself in this. And he knows he can. You know, if you're in Chase's situation, I think that's kind of the mindset you have to have the next couple weeks is don't. I respect that Chase is critical on himself and doesn't blow smoke up his own ass or doesn't, you know, pat himself on the back too much. But I think this is a situation where throw it out the window. You're the man. Treat yourself like you are and put yourself in this.
I had this question actually for you, and I'm glad I remembered it because I believe it's really a good question. And actually, if you're listening to this, tweet us with your answer to this question because I do believe it's interesting. Flip the points. Chase and Webb are tied. Jet is 15 points down. Who are you picking as a favorite in that situation?
If I take the way they're all riding right now, replicate it, but just say somehow the points got there. I would slightly tweak my percentages. I would give Webb so before I was saying 45, 45, 10, I'd go a higher, I'm not even going to try to do math right now. I would go 45 Coop, 35 Chase, and what does that leave me for Jet? 25? I would think because of Jet's speed advantage, he is more likely to overcome the gap than the other two, but I still would weigh because Chase doesn't have the speed advantage they did last year, a la Jet does right now, and Webb's just making anything happen. I give Webb a higher chance at beating Chase for the title if they were tied than beating Jet for the title.
See, that did not go the way I expected because I was fully ready for you to say if Jet was 15 points down right now, I would bet on Jet because Jet has the speed to make the difference, and he could quite easily win the last four races going away. Like I was
Red race to and then do a hard pass.
Jet was 15 points down, almost no problem.
I'm getting way too probably critical here, but I'm weighing even what we were talking about earlier, knowing there's probably going to be a mud race this weekend, not Philly being an unknown, and then two hard packs to finish it out, and seeing how he has not. It's so, I think it's really gnarly to say struggle because it's still impressive. It's what we said earlier in the year. Like it's a 450 class. It's deep. You can't come from bad starts. Just saying, if Jet got mediocre starts at Salt Lake and at Denver on hard pack, that he wouldn't come through to win.
Yeah, fair. As I said, really interesting question because I believe that everyone would have a very different opinion on that. Some people would want to bet on Jet 15 down. Some people are probably leaning towards being more critical of him at this point. So, yeah, if you
let me ask you a question in return. It's something I said earlier, and I'm really curious from a perspective standpoint. If Webb pulls this off and wins this championship, Webb is forever doubted. Like people are even bringing up on the forum threads from beginning of the season, you know, Webb is done, blah, blah, blah. Every year this happens. If he wins this, considering the breadth of talent, the situation of how he's come back, all these guys laying the career, these legends, if he pulls this off, does that A, change? It's not going to change everybody's opinion. There's still people that are going to doubt him because they do. Does it change the hierarchy of how you weigh Webb's career, and does this championship, is this the most meaningful one he wins? Like, is this the standout thing that you think the most of his competitors and the sport and everybody would respect the most?
My main consensus is that it would just really confirm to me how big a dicks we are to Webb, all of us in the sport. Like
I said, beginning of the year. Yep.
It's insane, really. Like, I don't know what, and I don't know what it is because it's not like he's quiet. He's anything but quiet. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Just jacked off.
Because even down to the fact that I've seen a lot of comments, this is certainly the best that Cooper Webb has ever ridden. And I'm even like, is that a bit of an insult? Because, like, are we all forgetting just how good he has been in 21, 2019, even 2020, the end of 2020, he was on a tear. Like, maybe this is the best that he's ever ridden, but let's not say it like it's a no-brainer because he's been incredible in years gone by. Like, it's just weird. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I don't know if I, you know, it's kind of funny thinking of that. I see his riding. I don't know if I'd say it's the best he's ever ridden. I feel like there's moments before where I've thought better, but I just, again, but I said before, I think he's just really doing all the right, like, he's putting himself in the right position. He is in the right state mentally. He is making the right choices at the right time. The guy has his head on so straight. I don't know if I'd necessarily wrap this up to this is the best he's ever ridden. I think he's just got all the puzzle pieces put together as best as he can at the moment.
Right, let's move on a little bit. Nice for Roczen to get his season back on track a little bit after difficult races in Seattle and St. Louis. And you know what is great about Ken Roczen? The fact that he looks great. 2024, it's Fox Racing's 50th anniversary year, marking 5 decades of getting after it. Rides, innovations, victories celebrate 50 years of looking forward with Fox. Hello, future. Thank you to Fox Racing for their support of this podcast, as well as Beta USA and, of course, Decal Works. That was also a little bit of a rebound from Anderson. Honestly, I truly believed that Jet would get him. Obviously, it was very close. He pretty much did, but ultimately didn't. Honestly, this is, in my mind, this is kind of Anderson's peak, like, at this point in the season. I can't see him finishing on the podium at any point before we throw the final checkered flag.
No, I agree, because I don't think the momentum is there. And like I said, I think, you know, we get to that needle point at the end of the season. Again, these last four rounds, what the championship are going to be. Like, I guess when we talk about between the next couple rounds, do you really expect Webb, Sexton, Lawrence to really finish off the podium much? Like that three combination. Like, I feel like it gets to the hell or high water point where, yeah, Jet could get a bad start again. But as we get to the needle point of this, what, like the incident behind Jason, I feel like we get two rounds to go and the championship is really coming down to the wire. Jet forces the issue earlier and makes it happen, even if it ends up being like pretty gnarly how they get together. But when you get down to the very end, the best guys will make sure that they're in it. You know what I mean?
I was surprised just how bad Tomac's start was in the main event, because his jump and the way he drove up the start straight, it didn't look bad. And then he just came out much worse than expected. Let me ask you this. Were you surprised that he didn't go with Jet the whole way?
A little bit. For as long as he held him, I thought maybe their pace was more similar, and based on how he's been riding the last 2 weeks, I thought even if Jet got him, he could like latch onto some lines. But yeah, it did not last nearly as long as I expected. I was a little bit surprised. I thought he was going to be able to go with him.
It's weird that he didn't, actually, because when they were together, they looked very comparable. Like,
yes,
it looked like they were going to go to the front together. And then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, Tomac lost a toe. I didn't actually see why. Maybe it was as simple as Jet got around a guy quick, like two laps before Eli got around the same guy, and then that was it. Eli lost the toe, and that's all she wrote. Hunter Lawrence, seventh. That's kind of what we expect from him, so good job. We're very thankful that Justin Cooper is in one piece and alive, so good for him.
I watched the replay of his crash. I felt so bad. Like it says, bad the situation is, could be the way he lands is good. But I like how he just kind of lands like sitting into that bank and then just sits there and stares at the bike. And you know, there's that thought process of like, what the fuck just happened? Why am I here right now?
Yeah, he sat and stared for a very long time as well.
I feel like he was very much rethinking his life choices, reconsidering Supercross, many things at that moment. Because I think his life flashed before his eyes and he's just laying there going, wow, I'm okay.
Good job to Justin Hill, ninth. Malcolm Stewart was more of what Malcolm Stewart has been doing, to be honest. This is kind of, I don't even believe at this point you can be too critical of his results, because this is just what it is. It is. Like, this is just his spot for whatever reason. Barsha was baffling, because Barsha looked good early on and then just the wheels fell off. I don't know. The PR didn't exactly explain. It just said it wasn't the result he wanted. Very weird, because effectively, it looked like with seven laps to go, he was just like, yeah, I can't do this. Like, yeah, a bizarre, actually. I have no idea what happened there, but it's. I don't feel like that was a straight up 11th. I feel like he was definitely better than that early on. I said to Benny Bloss after go on.
I was going to say with Barstool one more, so him and Malcolm both re-upped two-year deals this year. Considering what the rest of the field is doing, I hate to put this harshly, so I'm going to put both in this conversation. Do you see it changing much for next year?
Well, no.
Like, riding the ship, even... Like, I think they could even write the ship a decent amount on the riding, but how much is it going to show on paper, on track? Like, a position or two? Or are we talking about, can they really write the ship and get back to top five consistently? Not just once a season or twice a season, like in and out every other weekend.
I believe the Barsha can do that. Not come back and win the championship next year, but come back and be a solid top five guy again, sure. The jury is out on Malcolm. As I've kind of said on this podcast in the past, I do believe that we all have our memory of how good Malcolm is different to what the results show. I've been thinking this a lot recently. I would really like to dive into the minds of Malcolm, Husqvarna, et cetera, to see if they believe that there can be any improvement made before next year. Like, whether they truly believe, like, yeah, we'll get them next year, or if they're all like, yeah, maybe this is, like, maybe, as I said, maybe this is just Malcolm. Yeah, interesting. I said to Benny Bloss after the race that I don't want to celebrate his 12th place too much, because honestly, this is where he is. Like, at the beginning of the year, sure, a 12th was incredible, but now... I think anything outside of the top 10 is just like a normal Benny ride. Just a, yep, good, solid day at the office, and not cause for celebration so much. And he agreed. So also very, very happy with his beta. Like, overwhelmingly happy with his beta. So, yeah, that's good. And let me tell you about Beta. Vital MX is proudly supported by Beta Motorcycles, which has been a family-owned company since 1905. Beta manufactures the finest enduro, trials, dual sport, and motocross motorcycles that are known for their top quality and rideability. Their newest model, the 450RX, is the first four-stroke motocross model built by Beta. It was designed to offer a ride that is more forgiving, with the rare combination of premium performance and undeniable appeal. Check out betausa.com for more information. I want to talk about McIlrath, because McIlrath may be the most underrated, underappreciated rider in this series right now. Don't get me wrong, he's not showing top five potential, but he is improving, and there are clear signs of life there. I feel like he deserves the credit that he needs.
No, I know. Like, every week I laugh, even doing fantasy and stuff, I feel like he's that kind of rider that you always shy away from. This weekend's a little different with his result, but he always seems to do 2 to 3 spots better than I think he's going to. And he's had good moments in races, good starts. What, his points haul from last year, he was at 97 points last year at the same round. This year he's at 104, and a massive difference, but it's been decent. I'm just like, Shane's our one of what does the future hold? Is this just where he's going to chill for a while? Or, you know, is that enough? Like, what he's doing right now, is that enough to keep him on rides? Does, you know, how do people view him at this point?
Yeah, definitely enough to keep him on rides. Get him a factory ride. I don't know about that. But, yeah, definitely like a Phoenix Honda, an MCR, a HEP, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. For sure. He's kind of the best of the rest outside of the factory group. And that's counting Beta as factory, of course. Although he may even be better than Benny. I think he is better than Benny. I don't know.
Maybe that's higher than him in points. I think I've had some fairly similar results. I'd say he's better than Benny. I think the only non-factory guy that's better than Shane right now, but he's been out for a while, is Ferrandis.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, that's true. But Ferrandis has been gone for so long that he's not relevant to the conversation. Final note on 450s. I asked McElrath, obviously, World Supercross is going 450s only, which means that there's only two spots on HEP. And naturally, Roczen, Chisholm, and McElrath are all looking to do that.
Yeah.
And he said that is a very real discussion that needs to happen. They haven't really even approached it yet, but yeah, not really sure what's going to happen there. And I honestly have no idea how HEP figured that out. Although,
you take Shane.
No grounds over to base this on at all. I could see HEP running two teams in World Supercross, so four riders.
They'd have to take over somebody's team.
Yes.
Which,
that's the grounds that I base this on.
I will say, of all the teams that do the series, I think they're in the higher top three of who the promoter likes dealing with and has actually put a decent foot. First year, not so much. They didn't put together a very good effort the first year. Second year, they did. Yeah, if they need to, they could always have them pop a second team. I think that would actually be better than their other options of bringing somebody new in, because of the state of world, it isn't like there's a bunch of good teams jumping up and down to take over a spot. So if there's a team that departs or is kicked out, probably HEP running basically two teams would be the best bet.
I also hear that we should get a schedule in the next 2 weeks. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. I also hear Argentina won.
Oh, really?
What I hear.
I have a comment on media doing a bad job. Did you see the whole Mitchell Harrison, Cade Clayson confusion and people posting the picture of Mitchell cleaning out Barsha and saying it was Cade?
Yeah, and like I've seen people say, oh, it is confusing. Even Barsha was confused, but I'm like, yeah, no, that's not acceptable. Like, it's acceptable.
The photo, we're staring at the front number plate.
And also it's acceptable with like Barsha getting confused or whatever, but if you're media, you need to be quite, like, first of all, if you're unsure, you need to make sure you're sure, like, fact check. But you shouldn't be unsure in the first place. Yeah, I don't know. On to 250s, where Hayden Deegan, I would count this as Hayden Deegan's first true win. You know, this was all Deegan, start to finish. Honestly, the 250 race was a bore. Extremely boring, but this is spiced up the title fight somewhat, because now Deegan is only 13 points behind. Two showdowns to go. He is very much in this.
The showdown, I feel like, and not to say it's a side, but do you agree with me? I mean, Nashville will basically push if Hayden is going to be in this or not, because I just feel like the first show, like, because you can blow it or lose it at this one. Typical East versus West conversation. Who is better, Levi or Hayden?
I expect Levi to win the showdown going away. I truly believe Levi is the best 250 rider in America right now. That is my final answer. I say that with zero shakiness in my voice.
Wow. Period. Because I agree in Supercross. I don't agree overall.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking Supercross. We're not even...
Okay, you said 250 in America overall. Just making sure.
Yeah, I would bet significant money on Levi winning the showdown this weekend.
Where does the conversation of Hayden, Cameron, RJ land?
I believe that's your top four. What will be interesting about the showdown is Deegan and Hampshire are going to be out to make ground up. So I could see them both laying it all on the line, getting a little loose, and that being quite interesting to watch. You know, like, I think Deegan and Hampshire come out with clear intentions. So yeah, that'll be curious. I spoke to Deegan about training with Roczen at the Sandbox. He said he just needed to get away a little bit from the star facility to focus on technique, which goes along with what we've heard about the star facility.
Shocking. This is exactly what Levi said.
Yeah, it's just as far as I know, it's just a brawl at the star facility every single day. Moto,
Sprints,
sprint,
sprints,
moto,
sprints, moto,
sprint.
sprints, moto, sprints. 10 of you out there.
And yeah, well, it's curious because, okay, Deegan is the number one rider on that team, but I feel like if you start to let Deegan disappear for a week, and it's not a long-term move, it wasn't a long-term move, it was just a couple of days or even a day, but you start to set a precedent. So I'm curious how that goes moving forward.
How noticeable do you think it was? Because I think the last couple of rounds, Hayden has seemed to tick off in his aggression, especially something he's infamous for is his roll speed mid corner. It definitely seemed like everything was clicking again in a sense at the last race. Like the edge, like sharpen the blade, the edge was back.
I put that down to the weekend off, though. I don't put that down to the sandbox. I just put that to like the time off, making gains, getting healthier, because he.
I kind of lump those into the same breath though. Like if you just do motos, like sometimes what we were talking about, you sometimes lose that edge of just working on that final like 2% to how you 1% to how you do things. So like what you're saying, I agree with the week off, but I think it all kind of culminates together.
Yeah,
Taking the week off, but
that's fair.
working on the little things. So like because you already know you have the fitness, you have the laps in you, you've done the motos, you have the racecraft, but just sharpening that edge of okay, the next 2 weeks, I have all that in the bank. I'm just working on finding that one little percent. And that's what I was saying. I think that showed at the race. And I agree with you. I think it's a combination of being well rested, having the week off, and working on the little things. Like how, and I think that shows with Levi this year. Like, look at, I think some people do both things. Some people just do sections only and work on technique to the end of the world and don't have aggression, a la, let's say, like, Shimoda kind of always seems like the technique's really good, but the racecraft, the aggression, the motos aren't there. And then some guys just work on motos endlessly and don't have that extra 1% when they need it.
Give me your title percentages for 250 East.
It's so funny. I was just thinking about how I was so high on Tom a while ago. I mean, he's only 4 points. Ugh.
I would almost want to just do an
Forty,
equal split with all of them.
I'm gonna swing for this one. 40 Hayden, 30 Cameron, 30 Tom.
I will go 33.3 for all of them.
Waffle, 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 waffle.
I honestly don't know what.
Yeah.
But yeah, I lean towards Hayden. No, I don't know. Like as I said, I started saying that, and I doubted myself that quickly. Like I definitely don't know.
It's upset because again, Tom has 2 wins in the season. The starts, like, I don't know, the East-West shoe, I was just going to throw so much. Like, I think Hayden's got the shine from the performance over the weekend, recency bias. Cameron has probably overall looked the strongest across all the races. So you can sit there and argue Cameron, but I think we forgot how good Tom was there for like the middle portion. And again, anything can happen in a shootout. It really actually is. To your point, the 33.3, it is very even between these threes. I feel like of the three, maybe it's just because Tom is from MXGP, being that he didn't have a major supercross background, isn't in the limelight. I feel like Tom is probably viewed as the least likely of the three from a fan standpoint. Just the again, his star doesn't shine as bright, but he's easily just as in it as the other two.
Agreed. And I believe that what happened in Foxborough was perfectly okay for McAdoo and Vial. Like, no criticism, no concern. Like, yeah, they were both good.
Hey, funny one. We're talking about Hayden being in this 13 points down, and it's just funny how different it is with perspective. Pierce Brown is only 2 points behind that, but absolutely not in this conversation.
Yeah, but in fairness, since the Detroit first turn crash debacle, he's not beaten McAdoo or
No.
Vial once, and he's
Yeah,
only
yeah.
beaten Deegan once. So, like, it's actually shocking. This is similar to the Sexton being so close, closer than last year situation. Like, I don't quite understand how he's still that close.
It goes back to the first round.
Yeah, but, like, does it? Like, because, yeah, I guess so. Actually, yeah, interesting as well that all of the top three in the championship.
All had the shit first round.
Yeah, they were all in that mess. Yeah, interesting. But good for Pierce. 5-5-5-4-4-4. Very nice, consistent. You can't shake a stick at that.
The Pierce conversation, he's been, we've talked about this, like at one point it seemed like TLD like wasn't going to happen next year. He wanted to do something different. They wanted to do something different. Then I've heard it's their number one priority to bring him back. He's been consistent this year, but the speed, outright speed, hasn't been there as past years. What do you think is best? He stays put, or does he need to go give it a go somewhere else to see if he can finally break through that last, you know, level he needs to be in the conversation?
I'd like to see a change for both sides, not just for mm-hmm. Pierce's benefit, but also I feel like TLD have just been treading water with Pierce for so long mm-hmm. that it would be advantageous for them to go out and get someone else and see what they can do. I just feel like Pierce and TLD is almost stale and like, yeah, and he's shaking up a little bit.
I wonder if it's like an almost overreaction to what they had prior, where it was like Falk, Cantrell, I'm missing some guys like Drake, those guys that were like 1 year turn and burns, and they got so much flack for basically just lighting kids on fire after 1 year and sending them away. That they, you know, Pierce was one that was kind of, he was on the tail end of that group we talked about, but they felt very strongly about him. But if it's almost gone the opposite way where, okay, we're not going to ditch these kids, we're going to work on it. But it's, like I said, it's almost ran its course where it's gone a little too long.
Yeah. And although it can be hard to pull the pin and make a change like that, if I'm Pierce, I look in the mirror and I'm like, yeah, I need to take the leap of faith.
Well, I think if you're the team, it's both. What, like, he needs to take the leap of faith, because it's very easy. I says four. I mean, it could be make or break. You go to a star, you go to a PC, something, you don't figure it out. That's kind of it. It's like, okay, everybody's had this perception of what if Pierce tried something different and it worked. If it doesn't, then that just kind of confirms that that is what he is. If you're the team, of course, the negative is if he goes to a star, goes to a PC and does figure it out, how does that make you look? Which I feel like TLD's been kind of in that position before with Will, different guys over the years. So maybe I feel like they just have to head down. If they separate, just go, okay, we're moving on to, yeah, Ryder DeFrancesco, Cole Davies, those kind of kids, and just, you know, put your head down and work on it. And try not to think about the negative. Try not to hold on to somebody just for the fact of what if they go somewhere else and perform.
Anstey's foot was stuck in the main event. He said he was scared he was going to die. So there's that.
Okay, I have a question. I read his long Instagram post, and he said something about talking to Reeve, and it happens to their bikes too. I don't hear this happening about Hondas. Why does that worry me more than comforts me by reading it happens to their bikes too?
Yeah, I spoke to him about the Reeve phone call, but I can't, like, throttle cable supplier or something. But yeah, this issue has appeared in Australia multiple times.
Yeah, throttle cable supplier, something. Then Jesus, that doesn't comfort me.
He said that his throttle got stuck when it was like quarter to halfway open, and he slammed on the brakes, which kind of corrected it. But then he was just riding around the rest of the main event, thinking
it could happen at any time.
And to be honest with you, I'm just pulling off. Like, he's not in the championship. He's not. Yeah, like, just pull off. I don't really understand.
It's not worth it. I don't understand
the risk versus reward in that situation. Like, just pull off. But hey, that's it, me done. Also, St. Jude race this weekend. Anstey has a very cool bike, so look out for that. It's got eyes and a mouth. So,
and it's cars.
Yes. Let's just hope that Disney don't sue him. Shock 3-year deal, which was a shock, if you'll pardon the pun. But good for him. I mean, it's almost unbelievable, but good for him. And he did kind of what we've come to expect from him in the main event. He was just all alone. Interesting. This does not just go for this year. This has happened so many times in the past where a rookie's best race of the season is round one. Happened with Bennick. Happened with Juju.
Mm-hmm.
Ryder D, maybe? No?
His was not quite round one, but it was pretty early.
Oh, yeah, he was one position shy, like, of his season best in round one. But yeah, truthfully, Bennick has not been close to replicating what he did in Detroit, which I don't put on him at all, because this does just happen. I think that you come out at round one, you're a little naive, so you don't really overthink the situation. You just kind of close your eyes, go for it, and you're like, oh, sweet, this is good, this is easy. Then you start to think, okay, I'm third at my first ever race, and maybe I can win the championship. Well, I'll only get better from here, so I'll win soon. And then I think the reality of how hard it is to do this week to week catches up.
Well, one, I wonder, it'd be fun to ask like a Dax or a Juju, is take the next round or two. They have crashes, they have incidents with riders, they get cross jump, different things happen, stuff starts getting in your mind. Go ask them, okay, your first race, like what you said, was it really just, did you even think much the first race? And then after that, how much did all of your experiences start to just compile and weigh on you? Like, were you just riding around going, oh shit, if I do this, I might crash. Oh shit, if I do this, I might land on a tough block. Oh shit, is this lapper catching me? Oh, is this going on? Instead of, it's as dumb as the old adage, just ride your own race.
You do agree, though, it does happen a lot, right?
Oh, it does, because I think you're on point. Like, I think it's a bit out. Like, on one hand, you could be like, oh, it's first pro race nerves, but I think a lot of guys just go out there and they are, I think what you said, naive is almost the best way you put it. There is not a lot on their mind other than riding, and I think, you know, it doesn't, the next weekend, something happens, all of a sudden, yeah, you're kicked in the teeth. And then I think you just overthink things. I still think it's the toughest thing coming from amateurs to pros. I believe it was Ryan Holiday that said this in a video a couple years ago. It was kind of quoting like, okay, most of these kids that come out of amateurs win more than they lose. A Dax and a Juju, yeah, they could beat each other at Loretta's, but they're kind of at their qualifiers by themselves, their local national races. And if they do get beat, they have like four, five, 6 weeks to gather themselves, kind of put your head back on straight, build up the confidence before you do it again. But racing is just different. You have a good week. You're on the highest of highs. The next week you get kicked in the teeth 7 days later. And guess what? You're going to get kicked in the teeth 7 days later again. And nobody experiences that till they go pro, at least in the US. It's not like Europe with EMX or anything like that, where we just don't race off enough back to back. And I think that is one of the things these guys still struggle with the most, is just figuring out how to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and put your head back on straight in only 7 days.
I would anticipate a Evan Ferry has left Triumph PR sometime quite soon. So there's that. The other Triumph, eighth place, not so shabby.
When you say that, just based off, did you actually hear something, or just based off of past trends?
No, I heard something last week.
Okay, that kind of went shock me. I know, like, it's been kind of weird where, like, okay, they hired Brown as a team trainer, but the only person he works with is Swole, doesn't work. Evan is that kind of want to do their own thing. I just keep hearing things about like them wanting to do stuff their way, and it, as we can clearly see, it's just, I don't know what the hell's going on. It's not working.
Confused why Hymus was so good in the heat and then just it didn't happen at all in the main event, and also confused on what the hell Hymus's health status is, because retore his ACL, crashed hard again, beat up, blah 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 blah. So I have no idea if he's like 70%, 2%, who knows. So yeah, hard to judge Hymus, but still, I stand by what I said earlier in the season. Great potential, shown a lot of speed, and although there hasn't been some great results this year, I would be more than happy with what I've seen.
How many? So he won a heat race. How many heat races has Joe won? Just one?
Oh, like, who knows? Like, who knows? I do not retain heat race win knowledge.
I was just, well, come on, Mr. Stats. Like, I was just wondering, because I was going to say it puts the overall best victory between the two very similar, even though the season's been pretty meh.
I am done. How about you?
Oh, wow. Okay, I pulled the plug. It's over.
That's been an hour.
It's been an hour. Last, actually, one more for you. Tough night for Seth, for Hammaker. Kind of rare to see him actually pull off. We've talked about this with PC, and I don't know if this has changed recently with Cam, but technically, as of like a month ago, the only person with a contract for next year is Levi. Everybody else is on PC. Their contracts are up this year. You got to think they're going to retain Cam. Volin, they really want to give a shot still to. He needs to come back and perform. Faulkner as well, so he can still win. Seth seems to be the most likely to get clipped, in a sense, even though I know the team really likes him, Mitch really likes him from what I've heard. Do you think Seth can rebound and save his spot? If not, where do you think he ends up? Or in better sense, where would you like to see him end up?
I too have heard that Mitch loves him. But honestly, who do they replace him with? Piers? But then is Piers really that much of a...
I know. I said that before when we talked about this. I know that one's been brought up, and I just feel like it's... Even at its best, like, is it just an even trade to me? I'm not a fan of it. The only thing I could see is just, like, I know getting Volin on was pretty tough this year. I don't know Cowie-wise budget versus what they're doing 450s. Like, if they want to run five, if they also are trying to make room for up and coming, I would have to imagine. So right now, like, your Drew, like, my understanding is none of the Team Green kids, like, have guaranteed, they have, like, verbiage through Cowie to go pro, but not, like, guarantees. Drew would be the next one to come up. I would venture to say he races another year of futures. Maybe we see him outdoors next year. Maybe they're gearing up for that. I also wonder just in the future how much we're gearing up for Mitch to make a run at maybe say like a Heidewell or somebody from Europe, like, you know, kind of just getting ready for future options.
For some reason, I've barely even considered the idea that Hamaker will lose his ride. Like, I feel like he's so ingrained there and so set that for sure he gets another year at least.
I would hope so. I've just heard that, you know, he was possibly on the chopping block, and he's out there. Yes, Austin's hurt, but Austin did, you know, like how Mitch hung on to Marty, everybody for him hung on to Austin. Austin can still win, and if all the pieces of the puzzle are put together, he is the most likely on the team in a sense. Well, not Ken Levi, sorry, not the most likely. Austin has extremely high potential to win a championship. Seth has not proven that yet. So Austin is going to get the nod over Seth, and people could argue, yeah, Austin gets hurt. Well, you have enough guys on the team, you're kind of gambling to get the title in a sense. Like, you know, Levi is going to be solid next year. You know, Cam's going to always be there. Do you have Seth still just trying to figure out how to get on the podium consistently, or do you bet on Austin where, yeah, he may get hurt. There's high chance he gets hurt, but if all the things get put together, he's going to win races and probably win a title.
You lost me with that very... I
blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Either way, what I'm saying is, like, if you look at everybody on the team, like, there's a reason why Seth could be cut. But to what you said earlier, and I've said, I've heard he's really well liked on the team. So I'm just curious. I've heard that one brought up multiple times that somebody is probably going to be clipped. And yeah, it sucks if it was Seth. But if it was, again, back to my original adage, if it happens, where would you like to see Seth end up?
If you're another factory team, do you take a chance on him? Is he still considered... Like, I don't know if I do.
I was going to say Triumph because he worked with Tedesco. Tedesco likes him. Tedesco's okay. Over there.
Yep. Okay. And Triumph isn't, you know, that top level yet. So we get what I mean. Like, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Possible.
I think he would pair well against like a Jalik or something. You know, he would definitely be a good adage if that were to happen. Like, I don't see Seth. The reason I say that,
affect their program.
Yeah. Like, I don't see Seth going to Star unless Star just keeps... I have no... Actually, on top of that, just to reference that, I have no effing clue what Star is going to do next year. I mean, they signed Moseman to a multi-year deal, but they have a vast majority of their team has had a contract as well.
Just, they're going to sign everyone. It's going to be like it's going to be like Raiding Blue. Right. We are done. Any final thoughts? We are
done. Nope.
Oh, wow. Okay. In a word, who is going to win the 450 title?
Webb.
Okay, I'll say Jet Steel. I'm actually surprised you said that. But anyway, the podcast is over. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Vital MX post-race show. Thank you to Decal Works, Beta USA, and Fox Racing for their continued support. Another race done. We will be back next week to discuss Nashville. See you then.